Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, both for our radio audience as well as those tuning in online. Have another great hour coming up for you guys on the radio side of our program. For those joining us online, two great segments are coming up for you. And we're going to kick things off by speaking to Kat Warren. Kat's making her first appearance on our program today. She's the author of the book, What the Dog Knows, The Science and Wonder of Working Dogs, a fascinating look not only into her own life, but also into the life of dogs like Solo. We'll talk a little bit later about Solo and what Kat has been able to learn from Solo, but also, of course, the work that she's been able to do with dogs and the connection it's been able to make with individuals, and I should say in particular with animal lovers in particular as well. We'll talk to Kat about that as well as what she hopes you're able to take away from the book. Kat, hello to you, and welcome to Conversations Live.
Hi, nice to be here, Cyrus, and thanks for having me.
Well, look, the pleasure's definitely all mine. I want to say Kat was very gracious. I went into a family emergency last week. She was scheduled to be on our program. She was very gracious in rescheduling with us, and Kat, we're glad that we were able to make that happen. You know, the interesting thing about you and the work that you've been able to do, and I mentioned Solo, and we'll talk about Solo a little bit later, is that, you know, you are a part of a process that I think a lot of times is not really understood, but thanks to a book like What the Dog Knows, you're able to understand not only the work that goes into, of course, you know, a lot of the, you know, the horrible things that happen, especially after a disaster or an incident, but also the individuals behind it. I mean, what has it been like for you to kind of open up that door to allow us to know not only those who work in different situations that deal with, you know, especially when there's a body involved, but also the dogs that are behind that as well?
You know, one of the things that I've loved about both being involved with this work with Solo, who has now retired, actually. I worked him for 8 years and now starting to work with a new pup, is not just the dogs, but the fact is that the world of law enforcement and the people who end up caring and working on missing persons cases and knowing more about families and friends and the degree to which when someone is missing, as one of the handlers and trainers I respect so much said, there's no such thing as resolution until you find that person. So I keep that in the back of my mind all the time, and I think that the people who do this work feel that way too. It can be 3 years that somebody's gone, and yet family and friends, until there's real evidence that person is gone, in their heart of hearts, they never truly believe it.
Right. And I think that's the amazing thing about you and the work that you're able to do, and dogs like Solo, Kat, I think, as well. So, you know, you even talk about in the book that when you first tell people the work that you do, even working at a university, the response that sometimes is there, whether it's spoken, you know, or unspoken. I mean, what is it that initially led you to the work of being able to deal with not only working dogs, but also in this particular area?
Well, I mean, it's such a funny, you know, that there are people who get, there's two reactions. The people that go, oh, cool, you find missing and dead people. And then, of course, the other group that gets this look of distaste on their face. And I really actually understand both reactions.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was because, as you know from the book, that my husband and I got this impossible shepherd puppy who was just an pill is too small a word to use. The term the trainer used is probably too strong for this radio station. He was a real jerk. He was a singleton pup and did not have that early litter interaction to make him good with other dogs. And he was a very energetic, almost too much for me dog. And I took him to a trainer, and it was she who suggested this kind of work. And part of the reason is that I'm faculty at a university. I teach. I could do search and rescue at one level, but dropping everything to go searching for a lost, hopefully alive, missing child, for instance, you really just need to drop everything and run.
Yeah.
And I wasn't in that position. And as Nancy said, And she said it really, truly with a straight face, because it's true. The dead will wait, right? And so part of this work was possible with Solo because of the degree to which when you have someone missing, for the most part, unless it's a kind of disaster or something, you can say, and, you know, you're in Mississippi, so you know what summers are like here in North Carolina.
Right.
To say, you know what, the afternoon heat of the summer is not the best time to send a dog out into a swamp looking for somebody. Let's wait for the cool of the morning, right, to take advantage of the dog being able to do his best work, right?
Right.
Because when he's panting, he can't actually do a great job sniffing.
Right.
So, and of course, the secondary thing is that, you know, my father was a biologist. I grew up in the woods. You know, my brothers were hunters. For me, the whole aspect of death is to me part of a process. I had lots of exposure growing up to it, and that helps as well, I think.
Right. And you know, I think I want to talk about the relationship, because you said something in the book, and it reminded me of when I, for a brief time, just went to Katz when I was moving into a hotel where I was a manager at the time. And you had said about yourself, and I think it was so interesting, and so many people can relate to this, that when you were thinking about an animal, that your main thing was that you were not just looking for something to be around. You wanted something, you know, that would actually be a part of you. And that's why you settled on German Shepherds. You talked about that in the book. You know, do you think that part of it, too, is that it is a relationship, that is really what makes it all work, that there is a true relationship that forms, whether we're talking about working dogs, cat, or just our, you know, our animals, the animals that are in our lives, that there is something that has to be there between those two individuals for it to work?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I have friends where, you know, who have dogs in their lives, and it's great, and those dogs are pets, and they love them, and they kind of all love them equally. But the fact is that I grew up, my sweet father loved female Irish setters, and to tell you the truth, they drove me nuts, Cyrus. They were too happy and gay and distractible and kind of, those people who love Irish setters, they love that sort of spacey gaiety, right? And I was always drawn to the dogs that were more reserved and where I felt that it could be a kind of partnership,
right?
And that's what Solo, more than any other shepherd I've had in my life, was able to provide, is that that odd sense of working alongside something, an animal who is an equal to you, if that makes sense.
Right.
That what he brings to the relationship is what I bring to the relationship, and I depend on him, and he depends on me when we're out working, and that that's what makes it pretty special.
Yeah. Do you think it's because of that special bond that develops a cat that you're able then to be able to articulate it the way that you do in a book like What the Dog Knows? Because I was curious when I was first reading it, and then, of course, because I knew I was going to be speaking with you, I went into it with a different mindset anyway. But, you know, why did you decide to write the book? Why did you think now was the time to be able to share this book? And do you think that that's why, you know, when it comes to why you did it, do you think that the response shows that people were looking for something like this?
You know, that is such an interesting question. And at first, and I write a little bit about this, I'm not sure if I write about it in the book, I was actually almost superstitious about the notion about writing about this work. Because, you know, sometimes when you articulate something or write about it, you can actually kill that thing because it's so fragile,
right,
in some ways. And doing cadaver work, searching for the missing with Solo, was something that I kept very separate from my job as an academic. And so I had resisted it. And I had also resisted it partly because I think it's really hard to write about cases, and certainly about specific cases, without being very, very careful. And I was well aware of the fact that if I embarked on this, it was absolutely central that I respected people's privacy.
Right.
Okay? These are not cases to ever expose to the world without there being a real awareness on everybody's part that it's okay to do that. And as you know in the book, you know, it's maybe 30% about me and solo in training and 70% about other people, right?
Right.
And that helped. But there really was this moment when Solo turned about 6 years old and I'd been working with him. He'd been going out for about 3 years as a cadaver dog, and we had done a really hard search that day, hadn't found the victim, but Solo had done such good, honest work all day, and we were both exhausted, and I was sitting there on the couch with my husband, and I looked down at Solo and said to David, you know, I think I want to write about this world, right? And part of it, too, is that by then I was hearing all these myths out there about dogs' noses and how amazing they were and how infallible dogs were. And of course, I also knew that thing about good handlers and good dogs. That's a really hard thing to achieve. As I think some people know, it takes years and it takes real talent, and it's talent that I'm slowly acquiring. I've been doing this now for 10 and a half years, and I feel like a relative newcomer. And to be able to write about that as well started to interest me.
Hmm. You also say something very interesting about, you know, your thoughts about entering law enforcement. I want to talk about that, Kat, and then we're going to get into some of the responses. I want to say for those who are just tuning in, either on the radio dial or online, we're having a great conversation today with Kat Warren. Kat is the author of the book, What the Dog Knows, The Science and Wonder of Working Dogs. We've been talking to her not only about the work she was able to do with the dog Solo, but also about her interest into this work overall. You talk about in the book something, Kat, I knew I wanted to make sure I mentioned, because it's very obvious that the passion, you can even hear it in your voice, that you have. And one of the things that you wrote about, of course, is being a newspaper reporter and being able to cover crime. And you say in the book, several detectives had asked if I ever considered entering law enforcement. And this is the thing that really struck me. I had thought about law school, this is what you wrote, but I'm not sure what side I would have landed on, prosecution or defense. Ambivalence defined my relationship with any number of institutions, though, including the places that cut my monthly paychecks. I was simply adding more ambivalence to the mix. It goes both ways. I mean, you know, I thought that was interesting. Was when you were writing that, I mean, how did it feel to kind of put that out there, that you didn't know if you were going to enter, you know, that world, where you would want to fall?
You know, I think it's a really important point, Cyrus, and you're probably the first person who's brought it up. But the fact is that my politics and sensibilities on many, many things aren't what people would necessarily look at me and say, you're pro-law enforcement,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's also true that I have a different relationship. In other words, as a volunteer, I don't have to buy into worshiping law enforcement. I don't think that's my job. I think my job is to have a dog that's good at what he does, and that I be as good as I can be, and that I be aware that law enforcement is all over the map out there.
Right.
I've known good cops. I've known some bad cops. I've known everything in between. And the fact is that's the way the world is, right? It's always this marvelous shade of gray, and I wouldn't want it to be any other way. But I think that it's helpful when you go into cases to not have an inherent bias about the way something is going to go. I would say that over the years, working with law enforcement, there are a number of people who I admire beyond belief, right? And so I've also had the opportunity to work with people where it's certainly true that some of my academic friends might turn up their noses and sort of say, oh, you know, that's sort of a red state thing to do, right? And I don't view it that way. When I see people, you know, of all races, of all backgrounds, of all education who are in law enforcement and the reasons they go into it, the diversity within it also always strikes me. And to have access to that world as well, to me, is really important.
Right. Right. And that is what I think is so interesting about the response. I noticed again, and I mentioned to you, just this week, when I was first prepping for this segment, actually knowing I was going to be talking to you this week, going back through my notes over the weekend, and one of the reviews that had just been posted where someone basically said it was a book they had not intended to buy, but they said that it was a purchase on impulse that turned out to be one of the best books I've read. I mean, when you hear something like that, Kat, does that make you feel as though you did exactly what you wanted to do?
When I read that, I can't believe it, Cyrus. I think, me? My book? I will say this, that what I love with what's happening with the paperback coming out is that I hear from people from all walks of life, and people who love dogs, yes, but even people who are not dog people who pick up the book and find themselves drawn in. And I just actually feel honored. Nobody is obliged to buy a book and read it these
right.
days. As a matter of fact, it's an increasingly difficult thing for any of us to do. We're all so busy, you know. And so when somebody posts something about how they picked up the book on impulse and couldn't put it down, it's like, oh my goodness, you know. I'm just honored. And when people from law enforcement, I've gotten emails from people in law enforcement who email and say, this book really captured what it's like for us to be out on these searches, et cetera. I also feel as though that's an unusual thing because these can be pretty closed worlds, as you well know, right, where
right.
border crossing can be punished sometimes in different kinds of ways. And I think what I feel is I feel enormously lucky that with this book that hasn't happened. And I am sure that there are people, I know that there are people who sort of say, I was picking up a book hoping it was a training book and it's not. It's, you know, history and memoir, and it's sort of like, that's fine. I can understand, you know, thinking you were going to get a training book and then you open it up and it's kind of this mishmash of science and history and memoir. But for the most part, these reactions just really touch me. I mean, it absolutely
right.
makes my day.
Yeah. And there's a website that you have. We'll be giving that here in a moment, Kat. But you've definitely been able to stay connected with readers through social media. You and I kind of had a dialogue on social media as well. I mean, what has that part of the experience been like for you? I mean, you mentioned, of course, with the paperback. But even, you know, even a couple years ago with the initial release, you know, how people were saying, I remember one review I read was saying, you know, I've read it, you know, more than once. I mean, you know, do you hope that people are not only able to see, because the thing that really struck me, and I think even if I was not going to be speaking with you, was that it really shows another side of unsung heroes. I mean, is that kind of part of your hope as well?
Well, you know, yes. I mean, I'm certainly not one of the unsung heroes. What I love is that part of the stories that I tell, and I think you pick up on it too a little, Cyrus, is that I was able to go back and interview some of the people who were there at the beginning of learning how to work with scent dogs
right.
and post-Vietnam. And some of these people are in their 70s now, in their 80s. And, for instance, Andy Rebman is one of them. I mean, he's found more people alive and dead with his dogs than I think anybody else I know. And he's enormously gifted, fascinating, complicated man. And he's become an absolute mentor to me. But it's also true that his stories weren't all out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was involved in some of the biggest cases in the country, some of the biggest disasters, but some of the biggest sort of murder cases, and used his dogs to help solve some of those cases. And it was such a joy to me to be able to interview, talk with, and learn from some of these folks, too.
Right. And I think that's the thing. And I think, too, the common interest. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but when you were talking, I thought about another dog that we were able to read about. Is it pronounced Strega?
Strega, yes.
I mean, and that was another fascinating one. I think, and again, if it had not been for your book, Kat, I never would know, you know, about some of these. And I think that's the great thing about, you know, being able to do that, to introduce this world. Do you also hope, as we kind of began this conversation, I mentioned to you how what people say when you normally tell them what you do, do you hope that we're able to better understand why people do what they do as far as the profession, as well as, of course, the work and knowing what it means and what it can mean for families and providing closure?
You know, I think once people read it, they realize, first of all, that this kind of work is not like watching Bones on TV,
right?
Nor is it like experiencing the death of somebody you love, right? I think that those are the two sort of bookends that people often bring to this experience. It really is a kind of joyful and sobering work at the same time. It's joyful because it has to be, because otherwise the dogs won't work. They're not going to work if they don't think they're having fun.
Right.
Dogs don't work for love or because it's a dutiful, I must do this. Dogs work because it appeals to them. And so that helps define everything that cadaver dog handlers do, right? And then the second thing is that in terms of you being there with your dog, being able to keep that dog's joy and temperament up while you're doing the work also infects you as well. And so I think that when people read this, they go into it wondering if they're going to be, number one, grossed out, number two, right, that it's going to be enormously sad. And I don't know how you feel about it. I don't feel like it's a sad book.
Right.
Right? And because it's not all about cadaver dog work. It's about other functions, right? And you mentioned Strega, who was in Iraq and Afghanistan as a cadaver dog. But I got to watch Strega work on a hill where there were perhaps 6 unidentified slave graves, where the farmer who had the land wanted to know if the dogs could help pinpoint where those unidentified slave graves were. And I have to say that to me it was moving and evocative, but it also made me dig into the history of West Virginia and slavery, which is really a really problematic history, something that I wouldn't have thought. Virginia in some ways was a terrible state, and many, many slaves went through there on their way to the Deep South, but it was almost like the dog's nose pointed me to these hidden histories that I wouldn't have had access to. And so I got to watch Strega help identify. And they'll never excavate, so they're not going to disturb that hillside, and I think that that's right.
Mm-hmm.
But it does make you think. It makes you look at
right.
a hill, and you never look at that hill the same way again.
Exactly. Exactly. All because of the work that these great dogs were able to do. Again, everyone, Kat Warren has been our guest today. Great conversation with you today, Kat. The book is entitled What the Dog Knows, The Science and Wonder of Working Dogs. Kat has definitely been very gracious with her time today, sharing not only her own journey, but also, of course, that of others as well. I mentioned earlier that that the book was available on Amazon.com. That's where I was reading from the reviews there. You guys can definitely get it from there. But, Kat, you also have a website set up. Go ahead and give that out for our listeners.
I do. I have a website called Kat Warren, one word, CATWARREN.com, And I will just mention, Cyrus, that the publisher changed with the same book, but the paperback has a subtitle that is Scent Science and the Amazing Ways Dogs Perceive the World.
Okay.
It's basically the same book. I added an extra chapter to the paperback, but I don't want people to be confused. It's a different subtitle, but What the Dog Knows is still the title of the book.
Okay, thanks for that.
Yeah, thank you.
So catwarren.com is the website for people to be able to go to stay connected with Kat. As I referenced earlier, Kat is also on social media. You can find that information there as well. Kat, really appreciated your stopping by today, and I hope you'll come back. We'd love to share with you again.
Oh, I'd love to, and thank you for your incredibly wonderful questions. It always makes it easy to talk. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. We appreciate that. For our radio audience, there is more Conversations Live to come, so you guys stay where you are. I'll be back with you guys at the bottom of the hour after our musical break. For our online audience, though, we're going to lose you guys. So if you came in late and you missed part of the conversation with Kat, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you guys can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already posted on our social media pages at facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to twitter.com/CyrusWeb. Just click on that link. You can listen to the show completely for free, and even share it with your friends using the social media buttons you'll find there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music, as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. You all make it a great one.
GEICO has some bad news. There is no money tree, and there is no gold at the end of the rainbow. However, GEICO could save you hundreds on your car insurance. No matter what the competition says, GEICO has been saving people so much money, over 4 million drivers switched last year. So call GEICO for a free rate quote today. It's easier than trying to shake down a leprechaun.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.
Have you ever lost a loved one? Had to cope with handling their affairs? Found yourself on a fact-finding mission not knowing where to begin? Help your family by securing your important information in a safe, convenient, internet-based lockbox. Provide safe storage for bereavement details, policies and documents, and give clear direction if unable to speak for yourself. Visit www.virtuallastwishes.com or call 1-877-389-0099.
I used to drive all over town for low prices, but now I let Walmart's incredible new Savings Catcher do the work for me. I just enter my Walmart receipt online and Savings Catcher does the rest. It compares the prices I paid for items at Walmart with advertised prices from other top stores in my area. And if Savings Catcher finds a lower advertised price, Walmart gives me the difference on an e-gift card. Now that's my kind of work.
Introducing Savings Catcher from Walmart. Go to walmart.com/savingscatcher for details. Eligible items only. Restrictions apply.